I've been counting all my steps, all my no's just turned to yes. Silently I must confess my troubled history. This washed away all my sins, starting over once again. This is where it all begins.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and my Mopedman. Can I get a little Mopedman? Hour number two of CBD. Here we go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. We're joined by Ken LaVica from ESPN in West Palm. Ken, Browns, Dolphins, two winless teams getting set to hook up here this Sunday. Obviously, for the Browns, a lot of chaos at the quarterback position. They're down to their number three quarterback. What's the state of the Miami Dolphins right now?
The state of the Miami Dolphins is 0-2, just like the Browns, and in about as much flux as the Browns are, except for the fact that they have their franchise quarterback under center. And I know that's a revolving narrative in Cleveland every single season about a franchise quarterback, but I'm not sure what is worse. The Browns now going to an unproven guy after suffering two quarterback injuries in the first 2 weeks of the season, or the Dolphins, who have their franchise quarterback in year five, and we still don't know what he is, who he is, if he actually is the guy that the Dolphins want to go with long term. Really, Ryan Tannehill did not do much in week one against Seattle, led a late touchdown drive, but that was the extent of the production. And then last week in the first half against the Patriots was an absolute abomination. And that offense did not do anything. Ended up putting up 389 passing yards as the Patriots were really trying to run out clock in the second half down to Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. So I just feel like those are empty numbers. Ryan Tannehill now, I mean, this is the remaining 14 games for the Dolphins. This is his Adam Gase tryout. And I feel like in year five, and you just still don't know what Ryan Tannehill is. The Dolphins are a team with a lot of question marks, and it should not be that way.
Well, one of the things you can do when you have a quarterback struggling, you can turn around and hand the ball if you're running back. But Arian Foster, not even the team's leading rusher through two games, that is actually Ryan Tannehill with 52 yards. What's the latest on him? Sounds like a long shot to play. And if he is out, who do you see carrying the load?
Yeah, Arian Foster did not practice today, and it looks as if the team is moving forward, planning on not having him against the Browns. And so Jay Ajayi, second-year man, who was left off the trip to Seattle in week one because he had reported issues with him not being number one on the depth chart, Arian Foster leapfrogging him in the final couple of weeks of camp. He would be the starter. And then Isaiah Pede, former University of Cincinnati running back, he will end up being the backup, and said today he's looking forward to providing a spark to the offense. So now you're down to a running game that has Jay Ajayi and his Isaiah Pede. So it doesn't exactly bring comfort if the passing game starts to falter against the Browns on Sunday.
Yeah, and just talk about the wide receiving core along with Ryan Tannehill. You've got Devontae Parker in his second year. Jarvis Landry has set some franchise records in his first 2 years in the league, and the addition of Kenny Stills. Now, their stats look great, but how much of that has come in garbage time or comeback time? And what are your expectations this week against Joe Hayden, Jamar Taylor, and Tremont Williams?
Yeah, with the Dolphins offense, what Jarvis Landry is going to do is always get his. No matter how much the Dolphins are struggling, Ryan Tannehill's go-to target is going to be Landry because he gets open, nature of position there at the slot. Landry's always going to fight for extra yards, and it actually hurt him. He lost a fumble against the Patriots in the first half last week. So Landry will always find a way to make an impact. It's been getting Kenny Stills involved, and he was what many, including myself, last offseason were calling the steal of the offseason, getting him from New Orleans, but really has not been much of an impact player and dropped a sure touchdown against Seattle in the opening week of the season. And Devontae Parker continues to be plagued by injuries. Missed week one, did play against the Patriots, but he is not physically there yet. And the Dolphins in the past have had their issues with especially Joe Hayden in that Brown secondary. And so I feel like Ryan Tannehill probably feeling good about himself after putting up 389 against the Patriots, but these Dolphins receivers have struggled to get separation. You're not getting very much from the tight end position at all. That's including Jordan Cameron, someone that you guys are very familiar with up there in Cleveland. And it's going to have to improve. I don't see anything to suggest, though, that this Dolphins offense, unless they start to go no huddle and roll Ryan Tannehill out more, work him out of the shotgun like they did in the second half against the Patriots. This has not been a good pocket passing team, not a good take your time at the line of scrimmage team. If they speed it up, maybe some success, but the passing game, I don't have much confidence in it.
How's Leonte Carew doing? He was a guy that I liked in the draft process and wanted to end up here with the Browns. How's he been so far down there?
It's been quiet. It definitely has been quiet. And, in fact, the Dolphins draft class as a whole has been a little bit quiet as well. So it's just this team right now as a whole in the production that they're getting. In week one, the defense was able to look good until they really needed a stop, and the Seahawks able to march down the field and score with 30 seconds left to go. So at crucial times, the defense not coming through. They played well in the second half against the Patriots, but then allowed a five-minute drive that ate up a ton of clock and ended any comeback bid. And offensively, you're really struggling. And so this goes across the board. So acquisitions, draft picks, veterans really having a tough time putting this thing together with a new head coach in Adam Gates.
So you are not high on this Dolphins team right now. The defensive front, though, with Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh, Jordan Phillips, Mario Williams, Jason Jones, who's the team leader in sacks right now, that seems to be the strength of this defense, and they've injured a quarterback 2 weeks in a row. The Browns certainly can't afford to have their quarterback gone three straight weeks, but is that part of the defense at least living up to the billing?
Yeah, it is. And Ndamukong Suh still not putting up the type of numbers that we saw in Detroit. And I still think that scheme has a lot to do with that. But he has been disruptive. And he, against Seattle, maybe had his best game in a Dolphins uniform. No matter what the Dolphins did in the first half last week against the Patriots, it was not worthy of a pro football team. That was an absolute dumpster fire in the first two quarters in Foxborough. But that defensive front was able to come together and get the job done. That certainly has been the most consistent part of a defense that has a shaky secondary, a young secondary that's still trying to find itself, a group that hasn't really played together much, and so they're still trying to work out some kinks back there. That has been promising, the pressure up front, but Mario Williams has suffered an injury. Cameron Wake, still coming back from injury, has not been on the field in pivotal moments late in games the first two games of the season. In fact, today, Wake declined to speak to the media, so not sure what's happening there. That's very uncharacteristic of him. So despite the fact that unit's playing well, of course, with the Dolphins, there's always some controversy, and it happens to revolve around Cameron Wake right now.
I'm sure, and that's where I was kind of going with my next question. Do you believe that this year is really make or break for Cameron Wake to be a part of the future with the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah, I think so. And he's someone that has really defied age, and I think part of it is getting a late start and then going to the CFL and then coming to the NFL. But he's getting up there in age. He's well into his 30s at this point and coming off a serious injury last year. The problem is he's healthy now. And in the preseason, he showed flashes. He played predominantly on third down, but late in games, he's not even getting in the game on third down. And so that begs the question, is Cameron Wake getting a fair shot right now to be a part of the Dolphins' future plans? Or is this a designed effort to keep him off the field and sort of justify making sure that he's not a part of the process going forward? I still think he has football left in him, and I understand you trying to preserve Cameron Wake, but you've had an opportunity to win at Seattle and win at New England in the first 2 weeks, both one possession games, and Cam Wake hasn't been on the field, including Ndamukong Suh not on the field in the final five plays of that Patriots drive, that final Patriots possession in Foxborough. To me, that's not good coaching. What do I know? But it seems a little off when your two absolute money guys up front aren't playing.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Only 16 snaps last week for Wake, but very productive in those 16 snaps. And you wonder what that means going forward. Now, you talked a little bit about the offense, the struggles, Ryan Tannehill, et cetera. Adam Gase was hired to fix that. That's what he does. He's an offensive guy. What's kind of the sentiment around Adam Gase early in his tenure?
Well, Adam Gase has taken it on him and his coaching staff the first 2 weeks and saying that, hey, against Seattle, that was me. And when Ryan Tannehill came up to me and said, hey, we should do this, this, and this, that's when the offense started moving. So I'm going to listen more to Ryan Tannehill. Again, the first half was embarrassing last week against New England. And then in the second half, Ryan Tannehill found himself, got in a rhythm, was working out of the shotgun, hurried up offense, and that seemed to work a little bit. Adam Gase is a very intelligent coach. I think that he's always going to give you coach speak about, hey, a lot of these issues are detail-oriented. These are details. Well, the amount of details the Dolphins have missed then in the first 2 weeks is about New Testament length, but they are, you know, this is for Ryan Tannehill. If he can't get it done with Adam Gase, he's just not a viable playoff caliber starting quarterback in this league just based on Adam Gase's track record. I mean, he led the Broncos to the best offensive season we've ever seen with Peyton Manning, went and made Jay Cutler viable last year with the Bears, and we see how that's working out now in Chicago. And so Ryan Tannehill, I need to see more from him. History would suggest that Adam Gase can get the most out of him. But again, year five, Tannehill needs to perform this year under Gase. There's really no wiggle room anymore because it's getting to the point where the Dolphins could make a quarterback decision at the end of this season and not have a ton of money that ends up hitting them when you're talking about cap numbers.
Last one for me, and I'm going to jump back over the defensive side. Just talk about the inside linebackers. You got Ko Amisi, who's been a longtime Dolphin. And just talk about the fit of Kiko Alonso, who's bounced around the league, but finally healthy and starting for the Dolphins.
Yeah, Ko Amisi has just been one of those very underrated, steadfast players that's hung around with this franchise for a while now. He's physical. He has been banged up in his time. But he's consistent, and it's why he remains on the roster. And the linebacker position has been fine for the Dolphins so far through two games. Kiko Alonso, if he can stay healthy, I still think provides a very unique opportunity for the Dolphins to do some things, but his pass coverage has been rough. Jimmy Garoppolo consistently, before he got hurt in the first half against New England, was looking Alonso off the ball. There was so much open space in the middle of the field and over the top, and Alonso was one of the big reasons why that was the case. Kiko Alonso then ended up putting the hit on Garoppolo that knocked Garoppolo out of the game and injured his right shoulder. But Kiko Alonso definitely has to get better in pass coverage, or else it's going to be a long season in pass defense for the Dolphins.
Kent, when you look at this game, if you're the Browns, you've got Cody Kessler. Where can you attack this Dolphins defense, if anywhere?
I think that you can attack them in the flat. Pursuit to the football has been a little bit of an issue with this secondary and with the linebackers. Rashad Jones back there at safety for the Dolphins is still, in my mind, the best defensive player on this team. You can hit him short, and I still think that there is room in the middle of the field. I don't know how gutsy the Cleveland coaching staff feels about letting Cody Kessler throw the ball over the middle, but at some point you're going to have to try to exploit that. When Seattle got the ball moving at times, that's where it happened. Jimmy Garoppolo, like I was saying, absolutely tore them up. Running against the Dolphins is fairly difficult, but if you are going to run against them, you run it to the outside. That's where, if you're going to go conservative, you try to at least start the game setting that base and then see where you can go from there.
Yeah, they're second right now, 31st against the run in the National Football League, but that's part of it's because they've seen the highest number of volume of carries against them.
Yes.
Isaiah Crowell's had success up the middle. They're not really a sideline-to-sideline running team. The Browns right now running more power. Do you think those numbers for the Dolphins are a little bit misleading?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are. But I also think, too, that you at least try and set that tempo against the Dolphins. And you really, I would imagine, and you know better than I, but you want Cody Kessler to get worked into the game slowly. It's not like they're just going to toss him out there and say, hey, all right, go win this for us. And so the running game is going to be extremely important. But again, with the Dolphins, you want to run it to the outside. They're still pretty stout up the middle. There was an issue at times last year between the tackles, and Dominican Sue able to get the job done this year. I think he is much more aware of what he wants to do and much more in tune with what the Dolphins want to do defensively. But if you are going to beat the Dolphins in the run game, and I know it's more power here for the Browns, but find a way to get it to the outside early and try and gouge for 4 or 5 yards at a time.
That could be a game that favors Duke Johnson. Ken, we want to thank you so much for the time, the good insights here on the Miami Dolphins, and keep up the great work down there in West Palm.
All right, thanks, guys, and try and stay awake for the Browns-Dolphins on Sunday.
We'll do our best. Ken Levick, ESPN West Palm host, joining us there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. When we come back, we will get into the mailbag. At the bottom of this hour, we will hear from Joe Thomas, the Browns Pro Bowl left tackle. Again, for all the people drumming up the news about Joe Thomas potentially going to Minnesota after they lost their left tackle, I think that it seems that it would be a very difficult thing to pull off given the assets that the Minnesota Vikings have. But certainly, if there is a move made, that's some place that would make a lot of sense, although I'm sure all of us would be sad to see Joe go. Again, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns, who have all the X's and O's for your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. Back with more CBD right after this. Fans, head to browns.whereimfrom.com to enter for your chance to win an autographed Gary Barnidge t-shirt and a Where I'm From apparel gift pack. Winner will be selected on Sunday morning before the game. Where I'm From apparel makes high-quality, super-soft clothing that celebrates the places you're from. It's an Ohio-born and raised company headquartered in Columbus with 10 locations at malls throughout the state of Ohio, 5 right here in Northeast Ohio. Beachwood Place, South Park Mall, Great Lakes Mall, Summit Mall, and Belden Village Mall. Where's Belden Village?
Akron, Canton?
Canton. Is it possible that you might see Mopedman there?
Do they have a casual male inside the mall?
I know they have all-you-can-eat pizza.
Oh, you definitely find him there.
You definitely can. They have a new collection of exclusive Browns-themed designs, including Cardiac Kid shirt, a Muni Lot shirt, and a Here We Go Brownie shirt, also a retro helmet shirt. So check it out again. You can go to browns.whereimfrom.com. Let's bring in our producer, Mott Fontana.
Gentlemen.
Mott, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Let's go inside the mailbag.
Let's do it. You can tweet the show at Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD. Brian wants to know, guys, with Kessler now a quarterback, which offensive player benefits the most and which player does it hurt the most?
I would say this probably hurts Terrell Pryor most, just to go out on a limb. Okay. And I think this may actually help Andrew Hawkins the most because he's going to be in the slot an awful lot working those inside routes.
I think that it is. I don't really know that you could say that it really helps anybody. I think you're going to get more opportunities for Isaiah Crowell. I think you're going to get more opportunities for Duke Johnson. I think Barnidge, you know, the tight end becomes the quarterback's best friend, and Hawk, I think that was a good call. I also think Corey Coleman's going to get more of those quick ones to see what he can do yards after the catch-wise. But overall, let's be honest, when any team in the National Football League goes off of their first quarterback, off of their second quarterback, to their third quarterback, it's not typically good for the offense.
No.
And I don't expect that this is going to be good for the offense relative to Josh McCown or to Robert Griffin III. It's been pointed out that this week could be the first time in something like 30 years that you'll see two third-round rookies starting this early in the season at the same time. Dak Prescott, Cody Kessler. It could be three if Jacoby Brissett starts on Thursday night as well.
I think signs are pointing that way, even though they put, they say he's questionable, Garoppolo. But
yes.
Questionable is a broader spectrum now since they've redone that
injury
allotment.
They're very... They'd like to be coy about it, but I don't see it happening. Anyway, 216-578-0850. What else you got in the mailbag, Fontana?
Yeah, this one comes from Jimmy. Says, hashtag AskCBD. Guys, any update on Cam Irving, and how do you think our offensive line is set up to handle him not being there?
I think of all the injuries for the Browns, the one that will have the least impact directly on the performance of the offensive line or of the team will be the Cam Irving injury. I don't think Cam Irving was having the best first two games. I think that, you know, it could be cause for Ken Carmen on the Hugh Jackson Coaches Show Thursday night at 7 on the PNC Bank Radio Network to say, you know, Cam Irving was struggling out there today, coach. And I think he'd be very valid in saying that. I think he's had a very rough first two games. He looks lost in space. He has whiffed a number of blocks. I think he is really – struggled. And when you saw Greco come in, he's a guard. Bailey came in who played some at tackle. I think that the pass protection for this team is going to improve a little bit. And I also think you're going to be a little bit more physical up the middle running the football.
So that's what I thought.
This is one that I don't see having a major impact. Now, the future is with Cam Irving, and you want to see him develop, but the future is a little bit farther away than perhaps we all thought it was.
Yeah, I just think the mentality of Alvin Bailey as a football player, Austin Pastore, much more physical than finesse, and you know a back block by Greco, and you get Petonio pulling around on a power. I like the physicality that we can acquire on the right side by pulling Betonio that way.
And we did a lot of that in that game last week. You saw those guys get moving around, the big fellas come and pull the old pulling guard, as it were, Matt Wilhelm. All right, Fontana.
We continue on. Again, use that hashtag, AskCBD, Browns underscore daily on Twitter. This is from Brian also. He says, guys, is it crazy to think with all the Browns picks next year that they could draft a minimum of 3 quarterbacks in one draft?
I mean, I guess it's not crazy, but the truth is it's about the first one, getting the right one. And I think the Browns, as we are all going to be honest about this situation, given the injuries to RG3 and Josh McCown, there's a very good chance the Browns will be picking very early in the next draft, and they've got to get it right there. They've got to. If Carson Wentz turns out to be great, you know, and Corey Coleman turns out to be great, and you get the quarterback in 2017, it really lessens the sting of that. I think they did a good job drafting overall, but if they never get that quarterback and Wentz is good, you'll look back at this draft, no matter how you grade it, as a failure because they had the opportunity to get a franchise quarterback and didn't. I think next year it will be critical that they find that guy, and it's also tough to say that he's there. Now, 2018, Chosen Rosen could be there from UCLA, but you've got to get the guy now, and let's be honest, how many times is the guy that you sit in 2016 who's supposed to be the number one quarterback in 2018? How many times by the time you get to 2018 is he the number one quarterback?
Very often.
Christian Hackenberg was supposed to be
Matt Barkley.
The guy. Matt Barkley, the guy. So you hope you find him in this draft. I think that is by far, and away, the only thing that matters to this Cleveland Browns franchise coming into the 2017 season.
Yes. And I think, to answer that question, I believe you, with the number of picks that we have, I think you take multiple swings at the plate.
You can, but the truth is you need to get
you got to get the guy.
There's a good chance you are taking a quarterback, number one overall next year. I mean, if you look at, and this is not us being downers, this is just saying if you look at all the analytics websites out there, 538, ESPN's Power, and all of those things, give the Browns, at this point, almost a 50% chance of having the number one pick next year, which is the highest probability by far of any team in the league.
Sure.
If you get that, you need to hit that.
Yeah.
Period. End of story.
End of story.
Fontana.
This one's from Brad. He says, hashtag AskCBD. Guys, do you think the new rules of less contact in camp is one of the contributing factors to so many injuries early in the season?
I believe
it shouldn't
be
for us, though. I mean, we had as much contact as any team in the NFL.
Right, but I mean, but collectively, you look around the league, you got Adrian Peterson, DeMarcus Ware, Jimmy Garoppolo, Josh McCown, up in my head, Dante Moncrief. You're talking like players for these teams, you know, getting hurt. And these are
fantasy team, Mo.
This isn't like a week or 2 week thing. This is like, you know, 3 to 5 weeks and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's a 4 to 6 weeker. AP, last week alone, Amir Abdullah placed on IR. AP is banged up. Foster is out. You know, Jamal Charles is still out. There's tons of, I mean, you had 6 running backs in. Doug Martin is out 3 weeks. Rawls got banged up again. Their injury, it is a violent game. You played it for 8 years. I'm just happy you still look as good as you do. You move as well as you do.
I try.
Well, the looking good part's effortless, but the moving around part, sometimes I bet that does require some effort after playing in the National Football League. Fontana.
Scooby wants to know, guys, is Joe Hayden going to return more punts?
I don't know, but I can tell you when I watched it happen, first of all, I thought he did a better job than Tremont Williams because he caught the ball and ran forward with it, which is, that's a win. Secondly, all I was thinking is, he's for sure going to break his leg. Like, I was just like, it would be such a brown, like, it just, with everything that's happened, it would just be our luck that he would return a punt after having a great game with 2 interceptions and just, like, breaks leg. So, I get you want your best players out there, but I want Corey Coleman to return those punts.
Right.
And
the thing about it, even going back to
why not, Mo? Why do you shake your head?
No, and the reason why, as we talked I think it was between the 12 and 12:45 hour leading into pregame, and we were joined by Jim Donovan for Fact or Fiction. No, Jim Donovan.
Okay.
Jim Donovan. And
Yeah,
you were a part of it as well.
The Royal.
The NFL game whip.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
But we were joined for Fact or Fiction, and we talked about Corey, and one of the questions was, Fact or Fiction, should Corey Coleman be back returning punts? And it was, you know, a mixed of reviews of fact or fiction, and Jim actually chimed in from the booth while he was watching pregame warm-ups, and Corey Coleman dropped two consecutive punts. So I think what they're doing right now is giving Corey Coleman only what he needs to do and needs to know, and that is to play wide receiver at a high level for this offense.
So if you're keeping it simple, what about Duke Johnson then? Is there somebody that we have that we could exposing Joe Hayden to that risk, to me, it makes me nervous. I'm just going to be honest about it. It makes me a little bit nervous. If you could have anybody on our team returning punts, who would it be?
Maybe Ricardo Lewis, never done it. Because that high spark score, you know, he's explosive, physical, fast, tough to bring down, I would imagine.
Okay.
What about Hawk? Has he ever done it?
Yeah, he has done it.
Because he's pretty fast.
Fast.
I don't know if he's done it here. We used to have Taylor Gabriel would do it. Yeah, Hawk's fast. What about George Atkins in the third? But obviously it seems like it's a much different thing for kickoff returners and punt returners. It seems to be a very different
Very
world.
Different. Very different.
Not for like a guy like Devin Hester, Dante Hall back in the day. You had to chase around after Dante Hall, didn't you?
Not fun.
He was like a video game.
He was like a video.
He had a couple year stretch where he was. Didn't he have one year where he like returned seven?
I think he had one against us for sure.
For sure.
Is he in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Like the NFL Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
No.
Should he be for being the best returner? Like
but
him
he was
and,
the best returner for like a 2 year period. He like was like
four.
A shooting star.
Like him or Devin Hester?
Hester's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You think Hester's better than him?
Yeah.
Yes. He's the best. He's the best ever.
I mean, Dante Hall was pretty good.
He was, but it was a very brief window for Dante Hall.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm going to look up Dante Hall. Let's see his stats here. I like when he used to do the X. That was fun. 4.2940 he ran. Here we go. 9 seasons in the NFL, considered one of the greatest return specialists in NFL history. Hall is ranked as the 10th greatest return specialist in the history on the NFL Network's top 10 return aces. So there you go. His returning stats, he had 6 punt return touchdowns for his career. He had 6 kick returns, so only 12 total. He had a stretch of 3 years where he had at least 3 in each season.
What were those?
2002, 2003, 2004.
Yeah, my first two, the last two, so, 3 and 4 were my first 2 years.
Okay, Devin Hester's better.
Back off, Fontana.
All right, sorry. I'll go with Devin Hester.
All right, you got one more in the mailbag for us?
I do. This one's from J-Rod, excuse me. He wants to know, if you guys had your choice of any of the 31 other NFL teams, which one would you pick for Cody Kessler to start against? Now, we know it's going to be Miami, but if you could pick any other team, which one would you pick?
I would say, that's a good question. Maybe the Chicago Bears?
I'd say the Oakland Raiders, just because they've given up the most passing yards every single game.
And most points.
And the most points. And for some reason, Khalil Mack's not getting to the quarterback. So that's
what has changed there.
I don't know. He's getting like doubled, and Bruce Irvin's not getting it done on the other side. And Alden Smith and Khalil Mack was a pretty good duo.
It was
a good duo. It is interesting, though. You know, sometimes these things, they don't pan out. I don't know. You would think they would be able to get to the quarterback better than they have been. Now, one of the reasons that teams don't get to the quarterback as much as they'd like against the Cleveland Browns is Pro Bowl left tackle Joe Thomas. He joins us next on CBD. Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. Let's hear now from Browns 9-time Pro Bowl left tackle, Joe Thomas.
What's your confidence level in Cody? You feel like he's ready for this week?
I don't think he's ready on Wednesday, but he'll definitely be ready on Saturday. He's really studious. He's been studying to be the starter since he got here. And he got the opportunity probably sooner than he expected. But we know he's going to do a great job. He's a guy that's played some big-time football games at the college level. Playing at USC obviously is a big benefit for him. He's won games. He knows how to do it. The moment's not going to be too big for him. And we got a game plan we think is really well-tailored for the things that he does well. And I'm excited to see how he does.
Joe, that Miami front is pretty imposing. They've already been off to a pretty quick start when it comes to taking out opposing quarterbacks. And that, can you just touch on the challenge of trying to keep Cody clean and getting him through four quarters?
Yeah, well, Miami's front is really good. They spent a lot of money up front, obviously, on their defensive line. And those guys, they put them in situations to make plays. They're not gap eaters like some defensive lines. They're up the field, try to wreak havoc. And it's going to be a great challenge for us.
Hey Joe, you've been up through a lot of crazy stuff here. Where does Luke Stoops start quarterbacks in the first 2 weeks?
Well, I guess I haven't reflected on where it ranks, but certainly we've been in this situation before where we're down to the third quarterback. Unfortunately, it's happened more times than not in my career. So the guys that have been here for a while, we know how to handle it. And I think the guys that are new, it's a quick lesson on being ready, because at any moment you could go from zero snaps to being the starter.
And with a guy like, you know, quarterbacks are expected to lead, but obviously Cody hasn't played before. How do you kind of help bring him along?
Yeah. Well, I think this week of practice is really important for him to build his confidence. He's naturally a leader because of his temperament, but also his history at the quarterback position, that, like I mentioned, at USC. So this will be a big week of practice for him, just kind of asserting himself on the offense. And I think you become the leader when you show people you know what you're supposed to do and what everyone else is supposed to do when you're the quarterback. And I think we've got a lot of confidence that Cody's going to know exactly what to do.
Did you see progress in the offense from the first week to last week, and how much of that there was because of Josh?
Yeah, we saw some good progress. Obviously, we didn't have the success in the second half that we wanted. We had some tough breaks, but I thought we made some steps, and I think it'll be key for us to continue making those steps throughout the season. I think going into the season with as many young guys as we've had, we knew that it was going to be important to make those big strides every single week. But you see teams that have a lot of veteran starters, they start the season about the same place they finish the season, because the ceiling is lower for teams like that. But on a team like us that has many, many rookies that are starting, we've got a really high ceiling, and we've got to keep pushing throughout the season to make those improvements every week so that we're feeling good about where we are at the end of the year.
Last week, you said
you felt you had a good game plan for Cody. When is your first look at the game plan?
It's this morning, yeah. Wednesday's our big install day. We install a lot of the passes, all of the runs, all of our base offense type stuff. So that's kind of our big look at it. And then Thursday we'll get into some of more of the sub and third down stuff.
So I'm interested, when the coach introduces the game plan, is everybody in the room, you go page by page?
Yep, yeah, for the most part, at least in the run game. Once you get to the routes, the offensive line always breaks off because you don't want to waste our time talking about catching the ball. We usually just talk about the protections then, and for the most part, protections are always the same from week to week.
Does the head coach then describe the type of games you like to see, or you want to do this?
Well, yeah, so the team meeting that we have, which is one of the first things on a Wednesday morning, is kind of an overview on what it's going to take to win the game. We go over the goals. We go over the opposing players that are highlighted that we need to find a way to handle, and then from there we'll break down into more specifically how we're going to achieve the goals that week.
Is that always the head coach speaking?
Well, because our head coach is our offensive coordinator, you do get both of those from the same guy, but usually the head coach talks about the 10,000 foot view, and then the offensive coordinator will get more specifically into exactly the game plan.
At this stage of your career, do you have a standard speech that you give the next quarterback who comes? Or what did you say to Charlie White?
Nice to meet you.
What are you doing about Charlie? Joe, I mean, honestly, on Whitehurst, how do you get acclimated to somebody who might be in the game fast?
Well, you just try to make friends with him quick. Thanks. You know, you just try to introduce yourself, get to know him a little bit, and then get right to work. It's a busy, full work week in the NFL, and you don't really have a whole lot of time for get-to-know-yous, but the best place to get to know somebody is on the football field.
Joe, you've seen a lot of quarterbacks obviously play behind you. Have you ever seen anything like this? You know, three quarterbacks in a row, three different weeks. How do you process that?
We've had a lot of similar situations. We finished the season last year, like two or three in a row. I don't know what the number is, but we had Josh, Johnny, and Austin. And then my first few years, it was like a back and forth between Brady and Derek for a while. And then we threw Ken Dorsey in there, and another guy. So this is not uncharted, maybe back to back to back. I'm not sure. But it's something you can't really focus on too much. You know, you get asked about it, and you got to have an answer. But for the most part, my job is always the same, and that's comforting.
How about five different in five straight weeks? That's the streak you're on dating back to last season.
It gives you guys something to write about. I'm happy for you guys. Makes your job easier.
Can you admire a guy like Cody, who, guy from Bakersfield, you thought he was going to have to go to junior college? I mean, that's what he just said.
Yeah.
It's kind of been a journey, I guess.
Yeah. You admire a guy that kind of has a chip on his shoulder, a guy like Cody who has had to work for everything and hasn't been given anything. A smaller guy, not your 6'6", 250-pound quarterback, which is your prototypical NFL quarterback. So you respect him because you know that everything he's gotten, he's earned it.
Joe, it's never a good week to have a whole bunch of changes on the line. Is a week like this even worse because of the guys they have even on that front four? And how confident are you in the guys that you put it all together?
Yeah, every week there's challenges. In the NFL, there's great defensive lines every week almost. And so really there's not a good time to switch centers or to have new guys coming in that you've never played with before. But that's what we get paid to do is to be ready on Sunday to play to the best of our ability and to win games. So whoever's going to be in there, we're going to make the most of it and do everything we can to try to win.
Joe, what's your had any kind of observation or interaction with Cody that maybe he is a little bit different than a typical rookie?
Well, I think what you see with rookie quarterbacks is a studiousness that you don't see from a lot of other positions, and that's just kind of the nature of being a quarterback, and I think Cody Kessler is no different. You can tell he's been preparing to be the starter from the day he got here. He's a guy that was staying late in the spring, staying late during the summer, feeding off of everything that Josh and Robert said. And so it wasn't like he was sitting back and drawing cartoons in his notebook during meetings. I mean, he was legitimately preparing to be the starter every single week because he knew that that was the best way for him to learn this offense and the transition to the NFL. And so his opportunity came sooner than expected, but we have confidence he's going to do a great job.
That's Joe Thomas, and of course, he will be protecting the blind side of Cody Kessler. It will be the fifth straight game in which Joe Thomas has protected a different quarterback for the Cleveland Browns dating back to last season, and that's something that they hope, a trend they hope will end very, very soon. Going to be a tough one against a very good front. Cameron Wake, Jason Jones, currently their leader in sacks, Ndamukong Suh. This is a good deep. Mario Williams. There's a good defense down there, especially up front. They're going to get after the quarterback. I remember a couple of years ago was the home opener and the season opener when Cameron Wake got after Brandon Weeden.
Yes.
And beat him up pretty good. That was on Mitchell Schwartz, I remember, in that game, and people were ready to run him out of town, and now everybody wants to bring him back.
But now he's out.
Now he's gone. Yeah, you got what you wanted just a couple of years later, apparently. All right, when we come back, final thoughts here on today's edition of CBD. Tomorrow, we will get to know this Miami Dolphins team. We'll start to look at the matchups as well. And coming up, a new segment every Friday, Dane Brugler will join us, tell you what to look for around this football Saturday as you get ready for football Sunday. That'll start every Friday. Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. So we'll be back wrapping it up here on this hump day edition of CBD.
Barbed wire lines, these fields. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, wrapping it up here on this Wednesday. I got to say, it's funny, you know, we get used to people being so unhappy with the Browns, but having Ken LaVica on from West Palm, he was even more unhappy, I think, with the state of the Dolphins. Because I think there were expectations for that team this year.
Yes.
And they really were
struggling.
Well,
and because you figure they've paid their quarterback darn near $100 million. Okay. They've paid a defensive player darn near $100 million. They felt like Mario Williams was going to be that piece opposite Cameron Wake to really solidify that defense. You bring Byron Maxwell, you know, in from Philadelphia after a down year to play like the guy that he was in Seattle. You've got DeVante Parker. You've got Kenny Stills. You've got Jarvis Landry, who's basically, I think he's the in NFL history has the most receptions of all time in their first two NFL seasons, I think, with 195 receptions. So
Jarvis Landry?
As the gentleman said, he's going to get his. It's can you stop the guys around him? And I think the question marks at this point right now, as you heard him, Arian Foster possibly not going to play. J.A.J., second-year player who's been in and out of the lineup.
Interesting comment today, by the way, from Adam Gase about him when he was asked about his role in this game, and his response was, we'll see when the inactives come out. I think they want to give Isaiah Pete, who Ken LaVica talked about, the Rock, former second-round pick of the St. Louis Rams, whose career has never materialized. And it seems like he's a guy that could get an opportunity here to be the guy in this game against the Cleveland Browns, which is kind of stunning, kind of shocking. But, I mean, obviously they don't like Jay's attitude down there in Miami very much. He was inactive in week one, and now, you know, it sounds like he could be inactive again, which to me is kind of mind-boggling, really.
Yes.
So it could be Isaiah Pede there. And on their official depth chart that's released, he is number two. Damian Williams is listed as third. Kenyon Drake fourth. And then Isaiah Pede fifth. But it sounds like all of the talk right now is that it could be Isaiah Pede as the main guy for them in this game against the Cleveland Browns, which again, to me, is a rather stunning turn of events.
It is. And J.J. was what, a second-round pick last year?
Top four rounds, yeah.
Top four, early. Okay. First two-day pick for the Miami Dolphins. Arian Foster still struggling with
fifth round pick.
Okay, but a very productive runner and a guy that they liked last year and got his feet wet and is gonna, you know, but an attitude problem of a spoiled brat not getting the opportunity because you bring in a guy who's been to multiple Pro Bowls and Arian Foster and you're not gonna travel on your trip to Seattle because you're not happy that you're a backup running back. I mean, if I were Adam Gase, I think you responded appropriately by not having him travel and putting him in his place.
So going to be interesting. We'll hopefully have more updates for you on that. For the Browns today, Ibrahim Campbell did not practice with that hamstring. Derek Kindred was working with the first team out there today. So that was kind of the main one. Everybody else that was out were the people you would expect to be out with the big injuries there. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll hopefully hear from some of the coordinators of the Browns. We're told we will be able to get Josh McCown in studio before the week is over. So hopefully that will happen tomorrow. So lots to come here. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys for Mutt Fontana. We want to thank Ken LaVica for coming on with us today.
Mopedman.
And of course, Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.